Welcome, my friends, to the Sage Aquay Radio Hour, your home for free and critical thinking, and I'm your host, Mike Williams. Returning to the show tonight is our very special guest, Max Egan. Max is an activist, radio host, and political commentator, and in my opinion, one of the most empowering voices in alternative news and research today. His website, thecrowhouse.com, covers a vast array of topics spanning from government corruption to the mysteries of our ancient past. For tonight's discussion, Max will talk to us about the globalist effort, which is currently underway, to censor and restrict information on the Internet. We also discuss how the truth movement is hindered by pursuing both bottomless rabbit holes and controlled opposition. And we finish with a very frank conversation on the Zionist-Israeli plan of worldwide hegemony, which of course includes the brutal oppression of the Palestinian people. And to kick our show off, I asked Max if he could expand on his analysis from his recent radio show, A Plea for Sanity, where he discussed the efforts by the ruling elite to restrict the Internet and to help us understand the implications of censorship to both you and me. And so without further ado, here is Max Egan.
Well, it's true. They are. It's very much in play now with the new metadata laws that have come in this country now. They're basically just sort of setting it up, sort of locating where all the activists are, I think. That's a lot of what this is about. And pretty soon we're going to see a lot of restrictions. We've seen talk from people like David Cameron saying that online activism is as dangerous as ISIS, which is, of course, absurd. But they're very scared of what we're doing. They're very scared that the word is getting out so much. And they're going to try to limit that as much as possible. I mean, it's in their best interest to do so. Of course they're going to, because they can't really leave it the way it is. They're just being exposed too much. And that's why I suggested in the show that people start downloading stuff now.
Yeah.
Just download stuff and keep it safe and don't expect the Internet to stay as free as it is now. I mean, even now when you look at it, it's nowhere near as free as what it was, you know, 10 or 15 years ago. Now it's kind of like a big shopping mall and everything you do is watched and controlled. So I think it's going to get a lot worse than that. And I think it's time for us to start being aware of it. Don't take it for granted. Don't think it's going to be something that we've always got to use, because I think that's going to change. I don't think it'll last. I think it'll change for a little while. I mean, however they bring the control grid in, I just don't think it'll last. I think that no matter what they try to do, we're going to rise above it in the end.
Yeah, and it's interesting. You know, you see these search engine algorithms. This is what I'm seeing. Take Google as an example. You're already seeing how they're prioritizing what it is that shows up at the top of the page.
Oh, yeah. They've been doing that for a while. And even with YouTube, I mean, you notice now YouTube, you go to YouTube and it tailors your homepage for what you may have watched before and suggests what you may want to look at. It kind of makes sure you don't get access to all the information. It kind of tries to direct you into certain directions and keep you down certain rabbit holes, you know. They don't want you to just have free access to everything. I mean, YouTube used to be great. You'd go there and you'd see what was trending. You'd see what the most popular videos were in different genres, and you'd be able to find information. It's now very, very difficult to find a lot of information on the Internet, and they're just tightening it up in that way as well, you know.
You're exactly right, because as you mentioned that, I'm thinking, because I have my YouTube channel, so when I go there and I look at my feeds, there's a whole section that says, do you want to watch this again? So they're trying to get you to go back, like you said, not look forward, but to kind of keep you in the past and down into a particular rabbit hole.
Yeah, for sure. They've been moving towards this for quite a while now. I mean, every update that they've made to YouTube has been to further curtail the social experience that you can have there and to further limit your connection with people. That's what every one of their so-called upgrades has been about.
Yeah. So, Max, what about staying on the theme and the thread of YouTube and the Internet access and the channels and the communications that we have? You had also mentioned in your last show about the infighting within the alternative media. Can you expound on that a little bit? Just tell us a little bit more about your thoughts on the alternative media and perhaps the fact that a lot of it is controlled opposition these days.
Well, a lot of it is. I mean, anything that's creating infighting, I think, is bad. And you'll get people that aren't open to questions as well. And if you do question people, they attack you.
Yeah.
And people will post on your threads and they will be blatant personal attacks. You know, they're not really asking questions. They're just attacks. And this is all about creating division and creating infighting, perpetuating infighting, making sure we're arguing over details. And I was speaking a lot about the 9/11 truth movement, there's so much infighting in that. You know, was thermite used? Was it not? And because you disagree with me, you're a liar. You're a shill. You know, this sort of behavior is just ridiculous. And people that are calling other people's liars and shills at the drop of a hat are usually controlled opposition. You know, because we, you know, everybody's got a piece of the puzzle. And until we can realize that with things such as 9/11, I mean, the investigation is still open. Nobody can say they know for sure what happened because we've never had a proper investigation. People may suspect things. They may have a lot of evidence to back it up and they may even be right. But until we put it on the table, it's very dangerous to say, I know, and anybody who disagrees with me is a liar or a shill. This achieves nothing. It just creates division, and we end up doing the global elite's work for them just by continuing the infighting. We need to forget about all the details that we may be fighting about and just look at the overall event. As far as 9/11 goes, all we really need to convey to the public is that the official story is wrong and we need a new investigation. But when you start saying, oh, it's this, they used this, they did that, they did this, there were no planes, there was this, there was that, you start creating all of these arguments. That's all you're doing is creating arguments and debates over things that you don't know. You can't say you know anything for sure. You may suspect, but you don't know, not until you have an investigation. And we've really got to focus on the overall fact that the thing was a lie. It doesn't matter about the finer details. We can work that out when we have an investigation. But the thing is a lie. We need to convey that point to people. And it's the same with so many other aspects of the alternative research community. I was a bit concerned that people are going down rabbit holes that will never lead to, you know, questions, just years of debate, answers that we'll never get until we regain control of the system. I mean, I've spent years going down rabbit holes, Mike. I really have, and I'm no closer to the answers. I suspect a lot of things. I think I know what may be going on in a lot of respects, but I can't say that I do know for sure,
right?
Because we've never had access to the information. We're not going to know. We're not going to have answers to any of these ancient mysteries, all of these great problems that we face, until we put some transparency back in the system and regain control of the system. And then the answers to all of these great mysteries will become apparent. I mean, the reason all of these great mysteries even exist and all these rabbit holes even exist is because the control grid's there. And I think that's where we need to focus our attention. If we focus it there, then all of the other questions will be answered, you know?
You're on a very good point, because I've done a lot of research myself, Max, and one of the things that you learn quickly is, as you get into a certain area, that the bottom is virtually endless. You can go in and you uncover some information, and then you go deeper and deeper and deeper, and then you're just completely wrapped up in this particular piece of research, and you are not focusing or participating on the bigger picture.
Exactly. And the bigger picture is what's important. I mean, we've got a police state being rolled out this year in all of our countries, and it's extremely important we pay attention to it. You know, like we can look down all these rabbit holes all we want, but by the time we come out, we're going to find that we've got no internet left and we've got a police state that's been built around us while we were being distracted. And really, a lot of these rabbit holes, if you can't find an answer immediately, and it's just a rabbit hole that's going to take you years or months of research, then you need to put it aside for the moment and put yourself in a position to ensure that you can still continue that research. Because if this police state comes locking itself down the way it wants to this year, then we're not going to be in a position to be able to do any research anymore. We need to pay attention to our surroundings. We really do. You know, I think a lot of these rabbit holes are opening up now simply to distract people from what's actually going on around them. And we need to make it a priority. You know, if we can regain control of this system, I mean, all of our governments are in abusive office. Every single one of them is in abusive office. And if we can unite the alternate research community in a common goal, and that is to establish freedom on the planet, forget about all the little rabbit holes you're going down, all these things. We can investigate these things when we have enough freedom to investigate them properly without being constrained by political correctness or legislation which prevents us from doing so. So, you know, you're really never going to find an answer to a lot of these major questions until we regain control of this system. And because the system is consolidating its power so succinctly this year, we really do need to focus our attention on it this year, in order to answer all of these questions and in order to open up all these rabbit holes we're going down. I really believe if we could unite our minds and make a concerted effort to establish freedom for mankind, then all these questions will be answered and we'd be free to research. It's kind of counterproductive to not focus on that at the moment, because That is the main thing of importance, and you can see it everywhere. What they're doing in the Middle East and what they're doing to our countries as a result of what they're doing to the Middle East, this is a very, very important issue, and it's right in everybody's faces. And if you're going to be running down rabbit holes and not paying attention to this, you're simply allowing the police state to be built. And I think that's a lot of what this is about. That's a lot of why these rabbit holes are opening up now and why they're rabbit holes that are out to create so much division with people. Like they're, you know, all or nothing type rabbit holes. You know, you've got to be either all of this way or all of that way. And, you know, you can't be in the middle. You know, it's ridiculous. It's all about division, and division is the last thing we need at the moment. We really do need some unity. Then we can figure out what's going on and how we got here, you know.
But do you think, Max, that there are inroads being made? Because you did mention before with like David Cameron essentially saying that if you're a free thinker, you're a terrorist. They are starting to get, in my view, very worried about the fact that there is information out there that they're not controlling, and it is undermining their efforts. So one could step back and say, yes, but a lot of these things that we're chasing down is what's putting pressure on these guys and would be a reason as to why David Cameron would come out and say, look, you know, if you're a critical thinker, we're going to call you a terrorist. So are there inroads being made, or do you view it as, yeah, there were inroads being made, Mike, but it's not at a rate and pace that it needs to happen at. It needs to be quicker and more effective.
Well, it would be good if it was quicker and more effective. There are definitely inroads being made, and there are rabbit holes, and there are rabbit holes. There are rabbit holes which will lead you to information, and there are rabbit holes that are simply bottomless pits. You know, if you're going to spend your time debating now, say you're someone who's really concerned with the ET situation. You think there are extraterrestrials on the planet and all this sort of stuff. You think we're having visitors. You can sit there and investigate this for the next 200 years and you won't know until you regain control of the system.
Yeah.
If you're someone who is going down the creationist, evolutionist, interventionist rabbit hole, you're never going to answer this either. The flat earthers that are out there now, there's this rampant flat earth movement across the internet now, and you're never ever going to prove whether the earth is round or the earth is flat until you regain control of the system. These are bottomless pits, and they're opening up right now to keep you distracted from the root cause of the problem, which is the system itself. If you want to know if the earth is flat, if you want to know if there was intervention, if you want to know how the pyramids were built, if you want to know any of these things which have puzzled the mind of man for centuries, then you need to regain control of the system. Going down these rabbit holes now will lead you nowhere. They'll distract you from the police state that's being rolled out now. And this police state will consolidate itself within the next 12 to 18 months. So we don't have a lot of time to turn it around. And I think that's where the focus needs to be. I mean, sure, there's other rabbit holes, like there's the pedophile rings that they're looking into in England. This is stuff that's happening right now. This isn't ancient history. This is right now. This is government corruption that we're proving right now. This, to me, is not really a rabbit hole. It's simply a line of investigation, which is effective, and it's addressing things right now. Discussing whether the earth is flat is not doing anything about the political situation. It's not doing anything to stop the bombings in Yemen. It's not doing anything to rein our governments back under control, whereas exposing them as pedophiles is. So, you know, there are rabbit holes and there are rabbit holes. It's a matter of priorities. And if you really want to look down and find the answer to some of these ancient mysteries, you need to put yourself in a position where you can research them without having to be politically correct or being constrained by legislation, which means you need to focus on the control grid. Then that rabbit hole will be open for you to research for the next 200 years and knock yourself out, you know. But doing it now, it's counterproductive because you're allowing the control grid to be put in place. And I think a lot of these rabbit holes are opening up now as bottomless pits simply to siphon people down there and make sure that they don't pay attention to their surroundings.
Yeah, it's wheel spinning. A lot of people spend their time spinning their wheels. They think they're doing good stuff, but they're basically running in place.
They're focusing on an issue that can never be answered until the control grid we've got to take it back under control. The only reason these rabbit holes even exist is because the control grid's there. So that's where the focus needs to be. Get rid of the control grid. That'll open the rabbit hole up and you can explore it all you want. But until you do that, I mean, the reason it exists is because we've had information that's been hidden from us. We don't live in a free and open society. So let's establish some freedom so that then we can find out what happened and find out how we got here, you know?
Now, Max, there was a lecture you did back, I guess, in March of 2014. It was the Truthology Freedom Summit in Brisbane. And I hope you don't mind, but I took a segment of that which had to do with your explanation of the Palestinians' challenge and the Israeli occupation, and I put it up on my YouTube channel, and it's gotten a lot of hits, and I've gotten a lot of feedback from people saying thank you very much. It was one of the most succinct presentations done to help to present what's going on there between the state of Israel and the Palestinians. What is going on there? I mean, is it getting any better for the Palestinians? Is the rest of the world waking up to what's going on with regard to the Zionist ideology and their agenda? Or is this still as bad as it has been over the last few decades for the Palestinians?
Look, people are waking up to the Zionist agenda, which is good. The incursion into Gaza last year, the 51 days of intensive bombing that they labeled a war, which wasn't a war, it was just ethnic cleansing, but that served to create millions of new Palestinian activists out of people who'd never even heard of Gaza Strip before, so they shot themselves in the foot with that one. In regard to the situation in Palestine, it's absolutely horrendous. It's far, far worse than it's ever been. When I was there in 2012, it was very bad, but since the 51-day bombing campaign, they've destroyed like 18,000 homes. There's thousands and thousands of homeless people now. There's thousands of permanently disabled children now. It's absolutely horrendous, and it's just ongoing everywhere. They've been arresting people in the West Bank. They recently arrested a politician in the West Bank a day or two ago, raided her house at the middle of the night, and put her in administrative detention, interrogated her for 7 hours, and locked her up for 6 months without charge or trial because they say she's been speaking out against Israel. I mean, if a Palestinian went into Israel and arrested an Israeli politician and dragged them back to West Bank and put them in jail because they've been speaking out against Palestine, would that be accepted by the rest of the world? Of course not, but it's accepted by the rest of the world if Israel does this to Palestine. You know, it's a brutal apartheid state. It's a pariah state. It's not a democracy. And the situation for the Palestinians is absolutely dreadful. Even in Yarmouk refugee camp in Syria now, there's been 160,000 Palestinians living in that refugee camp in the most horrendous of conditions since 1947, since the Nakba. And 142,000 of them have had to flee since the war broke out in Syria. 18,000 of them are still trapped there. And the camp has just been taken over by ISIL, al-Nusra Front, al-Qaeda, who are using the refugee camp as a way to get into Damascus. And they're just slaughtering Palestinians by the hundreds while they're doing it. This, of course, is all run by Israel. I mean, this whole ISIS thing is a Western-run operation, all of it. And a lot of it has been designed to vilify the Palestinian people as well. There's all sorts of stuff going on there. General Sisi has bulldozed most of Rafah and move the town away from the border and close the border. General Sisi has just been given $1.3 billion worth of military hardware by the United States as well, and you've got to wonder what he's going to do with that. He's been given 125 tanks and 12 F-16 fighters to go in and help the party in Yemen go and kill a few Yemenis with the Saudi Arabians. But I suspect he's going to use that a lot of that against Gaza as well. So it's very, very bad. We cannot lapse our attention away from what's going on in Gaza Strip and in Palestine. Fortunately, Palestine's just joined the ICC, the International Criminal Court, and they're trying to press charges against Israel, which is, I suspect, why this Palestinian political figure has been arrested as well, because she was negotiating with the ICC. So I think it's all about trying to put pressure on Palestine not to press charges against Israel for war crimes, and Israel should be charged with war crimes. You know, it's an outrage what's going on there, and the international community really needs to stand up and look at this and call a spade a spade. You know, Israel is being brutal to the Palestinian people. It's been carrying out ethnic cleansing for the last 67 years under the guise of victimhood, mm-hmm. and it's not a victim at all. It's absolutely disgraceful what's going on, and we have to stop looking at it as being an issue between, you know, Muslims and Jews or Israelis and Palestinians. What it is a humanitarian issue. It's a humanitarian crisis. You've got people killing other people. And Gaza Strip is a war crime. The mere existence of it is a war crime. It's collective punishment. This is a war crime under the Fourth Geneva Convention, and it needs to stop. And personally, I think it's a great opportunity for the whole world to rein our own governments in, because it's an open war crime. You know, occupation of the West Bank and building settlements, this is a war crime, Fourth Geneva Convention. Collective punishment in Gaza, war crime, Fourth Geneva Convention. This gives us the ability to rein our own governments in, to have our own governments charged with war crimes and dismiss them, because every government that is supporting Israel or offering finances to Israel is openly supporting war crimes. And if we had a united community that respected each other and wasn't busy running down rabbit holes and actually wanted to address this situation, we've got an opportunity here to rein all of our governments back under control, express a loss of confidence in them, accuse them of abuse of office, have them taken to the Hague and charged, and put something real and transparent in place. You know, if we had a united community, we could do that. And we've been given every opportunity to do it by Palestine. You know, the people in Gaza and the people of Palestine are suffering, and they're providing us an opportunity with their suffering. And we could both heal our situation out here in the West and also heal the situation for them if we would simply stand up and call a spade a spade. This has been my point for years on the show. This is what I've been trying to say to people. All these rabbit holes and all this stuff you're looking at, all these things you're investigating, let's address it all from the root cause. The root cause is government corruption that exists because of a disunited community. So let's address that.
Well, Max, when we look at Israel and we take a look at the negotiations with Iran and the United States, and there appears to be some distance between, and I say appears to be because my personal opinion is there's some theater going on between the Obama administration and Netanyahu. What do you think is transpiring there?
Look, you know, I think Obama's got to appear to care. The world is really, really upset with Israel. I mean, let's face it, Israel's done some really bad stuff. It's really shot itself in the foot. The whole world can see what's going on. But I think, you know, Obama's got to appear to care. And some of the things you said, like, you know, Israel needs to go back to the 1967 borders. Israel's never going to do this.
Yeah,
they should. They should actually go back to the 1947 borders, and they should even look at whether that even they are legitimate. I mean, the whole place should become Palestine again, I think. But, you know, that's just me. But if you really want to go to any borders, you should go back to the 1947 borders. 1967 borders, that's a start. It's something, but it's not enough. But, and also saying that they're going to, talk about sanctions on Israel and, you know, reducing aid to Israel. I think a lot of this is rhetoric. It's done to give the people a little modicum of hope and let us think that, oh, look, something good is about to happen. You know, we don't have to really make that much of a fuss because something good is about to happen. They're actually going to be responsible. Of course, as soon as we saw this, we saw the war erupt in Yemen and the whole situation erupt in Yarmouk refugee camp in Syria. So it just gets escalated somewhere else, and people have that little modicum of the hope in the back of their mind, and they put it on the shelf, and then they watch the conflict escalate all around them, you know. And they tend to do this. They offer us little modicums of hope that never really seem to go anywhere, and it just gets better. It kind of a little bit of appeasement for the people to prevent us from, you know, prevent any uprising from happening and prevent us from speaking out too loudly and let us think that they care. But, I mean, Obama's a puppet. He can say what he wants, but ultimately the American government will do what the banking cartel that controls it wants it to do. And it's the same banking cartel that controls Israel. And that's why the situation is the way it is in the Middle East. I mean, you look at all of the aid that the United States gives to Israel in the form of money and weaponry, and you look at the impoverishment of the people in the United States. I mean, you got half of Chicago without water. You've got homeless people all over the place. You've got tent cities springing up in the United States. You're still giving $7 million a day to Israel in the form of military aid. And it's because you've got, you know, a lot of people say to me, well, what's the U.S. interest in all of this? Well, there is no U.S. interest in it. It's because you have this incredibly huge Zionist lobby of dual citizens, which has infiltrated the entire U.S. government and is funneling all the wealth of the United States out of the country and into the Middle East. Look at the situation in Afghanistan. You've got $104 billion has been poured into Afghanistan since 2002 or 2003. And of that, they can account for $38 billion. That's $62 billion that is missing.
Yeah.
Just gone missing. We've just misplaced it. And that's just Afghanistan. Not to mention Iraq. You've got at least 50,000 ghost soldiers receiving wages in Iraq, and this money's going somewhere. You've incidentally got at least 50,000 ISIL terrorists in Iraq as well. They're all using U.S. weapons and driving brand new Toyotas and wearing brand new Nikes and using AR-15s and M-16s, you know. So, and they're all getting U.S. weapons dropped. So This has all been funneled out of the United States. All of these billions and billions of dollars have been funneled out of the U.S. economy into the Middle East to destabilize the region, pump heaps and heaps of weapons and arms into the area. They don't know who they're fighting. They don't know where any of it's going. They're just pouring as much hardware and money in there and instability in there as they can. They don't want to create any freedom. They don't want to create any new governments or anything. They just want to create a whole bunch of failed states and balkanize the entire area. And it's all been done by Israeli elements and Zionist elements within the U.S. government. That's how it's all coming about. So people need to wake up and smell the coffee and see what this is. I mean, if people go out and read a document called A Strategy for Israel in the 1980s by a man called Oded Yinin, 1982, he put this document out, and it tells you exactly what the plan is for the Middle Eastern region to completely destabilize and balkanize the entire area and turn it into Greater Israel.
Right.
And that's exactly what they're doing. You can read that document and go and look at the Middle East now. It even names the countries. Yemen's on the list. Syria's on the list. Iraq's on the list. It names them all. And it's exactly what they're doing. So people need to just look at it, because the American people are the ones who are paying for it all. And it's Israel doing the whole lot.
Yeah, it's interesting, because if you Google the Greater Israel Plan, you're going to see the map. And then, as you just mentioned, you can take a look at all the countries. And you can see these are all the places that they're playing in right now.
Yeah, and even if you look at the PNAC document, Rebuilding America's Defenses, when it says that it's going to be accomplished through various theater wars.
Right.
And it goes through the list. It goes through Yemen, Libya, Syria, Iraq, everything that they're doing, all the same countries that are all on this list. I mean, is this a coincidence? I don't think so. You know, these are peaceful nations. They're nations that, I mean, you look at the Arab world. I mean, the Arab world is kind of divided. You know, a lot of the people don't really get along with each other. A lot of the countries don't get along with each other. There is no real cohesion in the Arab world. There's no way the Arab world is going to pick a fight with the West, because when the West goes to war, it's NATO. It's all these huge coalitions of incredible, powerful military hardware. You pick a fight with these guys, they come and stomp on you every time. There's no reason ISIS and ISIL and all these crew would be there trying to pick a fight with the West and killing Muslim after Muslim while they're doing it. And everything they're doing is designed to turn the world against Islam. Look, they threatened to, blow up the Sphinx and the pyramids the other day?
Yeah.
That's great for Islam, isn't it? Everyone's going to love Islam now, aren't they? No, of course they're not. It's designed to make the world want to go and bomb the Arabs out of existence. Now, who is it that wants to do that? It's Israel. Of course it is. Israel's behind the whole thing.
Now, Max, you mentioned before about Obama being a puppet, and I think the proof in the pudding here in the United States is when Netanyahu showed up to address the Congress.
Oh, that was incredible, wasn't it? What, 21 or 24 standing ovations for spewing lie after lie after lie? I mean, what is this? It's sickening. Benjamin Netanyahu, I mean, the man's a war criminal. He's got so much blood on his hands. He's an assassin. He's a member of Sayyid Makal. I mean, yeah, he's a war criminal. And to have this mass murdering child killer stand before the U.S. Congress and get 24 standing ovations, yeah, is absolutely sickening.
Well, what it shows you is, you know, you talked about before, this is not Muslims, Christians. It's not that. It's a Zionist thing, right? Because many in the Congress of the United States, they have their allegiance to Israel, to the Zionist state. And, when you try to explain this to people, first of all, when you try to explain to people about Zionism, they just shut down. They really don't know what you're talking about, because they've done a very good job of equating. If you're talking about Zionism, you're talking about Jews, and we just don't talk about Jews, so we just can't have the conversation. You know how that works?
Yeah, yeah. You're called anti-Semitic because you're talking about Zionism, because if you're anti-Zionist, you must be anti-Semitic.
Exactly. Exactly. But we have that whole dual citizenship in this country, and it permeates throughout the government institutions, and this is the problem.
Well, yeah. I mean, why have you got dual citizens in your government? And even to the extent, like, it's ingrained into the people that you've got to support Israel so much that even if you mention that, oh, you're anti-Semitic. Hang on. No, I'm not anti-Semitic. I'm just asking why you've got dual citizens in your government. If these people were half German, would you have them in your government? If they were half Muslim, would you have them in your government? How come you can have these people who are dual citizens in this one particular nation and you can't question what this nation does? You can't question anything Israel does. If you do, you're anti-Semitic. And as soon as you do, they go, oh, the Holocaust, anti-Semitism. Well, hang on a minute. It's got nothing to do with the Holocaust. It's got nothing to do with anti-Semitism. How come this state can do things and we can't question it? That's not acceptable, you know. It doesn't matter who was doing this to the Palestinian people. It doesn't matter if this is Ireland doing it to Cornwall. You know, it doesn't matter who it is. It's a humanitarian crisis is what's going on. And the fact that it's Israel doing it, I mean, frankly, these people should know better. These people should know better than to persecute another race the way they're doing. I mean, honestly, it's completely unacceptable. And the fact that you're not allowed to question it means that we should all question it very, very loudly, and we should speak out against it as much as we possibly can. And even the fact that they're bringing in legislation to prevent you questioning anything Israel does, this is ridiculous. It's absolutely ridiculous. There was a guy arrested in France a few weeks ago for questioning the Holocaust.
Right.
What is this? Why are we not allowed to question this event? Because truth does not fear investigation. Truth is its own defense. It does not require legislation to back it up. You know, if I'm told I can't question something, I'm going to question it. I'm going to investigate it, and I'm going to do it as loudly and publicly as possible because I don't do know. You know, I don't do can't. I don't do being told that I can't investigate something. You know, it raises red flags, and I think it should raise red flags with everybody.
Well, in many countries in Europe, it's a thought crime. You cannot talk about the Holocaust. And a lot of people don't know that. United States and, you know, in Britain, they take it for granted that you can kind of say something. But in many countries in Europe, you can't say anything. And if you push the envelope, they will lock you up.
They will. Absolutely. And it's the only Holocaust that we're allowed to even acknowledge. It's the only Holocaust, the Jewish Holocaust of 6 million people. What about the 7 million Irish that died in what was presented to the world as the Great Potato Famine, a Holocaust that was carried out against the Irish people by the British government, 7 million people? What about the greatest Holocaust in history? The brutal torture and murder and death of 66 million Christians, a full 11 times the number that was mentioned in the Jewish Holocaust. 66 million Christians who were killed in the Russian gulags by Bolshevik Jews. How come we're not allowed to talk about that? There was a book by Alexander Solzhenitsyn called 200 Years Together, and it is the only book of Solzhenitsyn's that has never been translated into English. They will not translate this book into English because it tells the story of the Holocaust of 66 million Christians at the hands of Bolshevik Jews. And we're not allowed to talk about this. We're not even allowed to acknowledge that this happens. If we do, we're anti-Semitic. What is this? This is ridiculous.
Well, even the Native American Indian, the slaughter of the Indians, nobody ever talks about that either.
Exactly. Yeah. The ethnic cleansing that's going on here in Australia right now, the ethnic cleansing of the Aboriginal people in this country, which is an ongoing thing, has been going on for 200 years. We're not even allowed to acknowledge that. You know, it's ridiculous. And the figure of 6 million that the Jews used in the Holocaust, this figure was first used in 1906. It was used again in 1914, 1916, 1921. This claim that 6 million Jews have been killed in Europe has been ongoing for the entire 20th century. And nobody believed it until World War II. And I have questions. I have real questions because of the legislation that exists that prevents me from questioning this event and the fact that I'm not allowed to acknowledge any other Holocaust. I have a huge problem with this. I really do.
I read a book by Nick Kahlestrom, and in Nick's book, he mentions that the 6 million number was mentioned 6 million oppressed, 6 million in harm's way, you know, some form or shape of 6 million was used something like 165 times before World War II.
276 to be precise.
Okay, well, I stand corrected.
I actually have a list of the every time it was used on my website. There's a page there you'll find in the articles called Holohoax and or Investigating the Holocaust. And that figure was actually used 276 times before World War II in the 20th century alone.
A lot of times. Now, Max, just going back to Palestine for a second, because, and the reason why I'm kind of sticking on this is because when I have conversations with folks, you know, it's just trying to break the programming with some people is very, very difficult. They are bought and sold on the fact that the Palestinians are terrorists. They have rockets. They actually believe they have a military. So I was wondering if you can just give us some background on what do they have? Do they have an army, an air force, a navy? What are the demographics of the Palestinian people, men, women, children?
Well, in Gaza Strip in particular, yeah. My focus is mainly on Gaza. I can't really give you statistics for West Bank. Oh, West Bank, it changes all the time. Even the terrain in West Bank changes all the time because the Israelis take over so much land. But in Gaza Strip, Gaza Strip is the world's largest open air prison. It's got a 50-foot wall around the entire place on three sides. It's got a military blockade on the other. The population of Gaza is 1.8 million people. It's in an area 25 miles long, 5 miles wide. 1.8 million people, over 900,000 of them are children under the age of 18. Around about 400 to 450,000 of them are women. And so you've got 400 to 450,000 men. Of them, less than 1% have ever fired a weapon. The only weapons they've got to use against Israel are light ordnance, Kalashnikov, you know, AK-47s, and homemade rockets that they use. These are metal pipes that are powered with fertilizer that don't have any warheads. They shoot them over the wall and they come down and put a hole in your roof or put a hole in your car, put a black splodge on the road. They don't blow up. They don't blow anything up. That's the only defense they've got against Israel, which is one of the most powerful militaries on earth. Israel constantly lobs bombs over the fence. It constantly shoots fishermen. When I was there in 2012, there was times when bombs landed in northern Gaza, rockets landed in northern Gaza. There was one morning I woke up and there was an Israeli gunboat machine gunning fishermen just off the shore. All this sort of stuff. They put up with this type of brutal terrorism and this brutal aggression from Israel all the time. And whenever they respond, they get called terrorists, and Israel cries victim and goes in and massacres as many of them as they can. Israel is the aggressive force in the Palestinian-Israeli conflict. It always has been. The land was divided in 1947. Israel was given half of the country. The people who came there and populated it were from Europe. They had no claim to the land. They're not Semitic Jews who right. have any ancestral or genetic claim to the area. They came there, populated the land, and they've been basically taking over the rest of Palestine ever since under the guise of victim. In the moment, they're in the process of kicking all the Africans out of Israel, people that have lived there for generations, centuries before they even came. They're kicking all the people out, sending them back to Sudan and back to this. And people go, hang on, I live here. I was born here. No, no, go back to Sudan. You're Sudanese. You know, they want everybody out of Israel who isn't a Jew. And that includes all the Palestinians, and they want all of Palestine to become Israel. The Palestinians are not terrorists. The people in Gaza are not terrorists. They are impoverished human beings living in an open-air prison in brutal, horrendous conditions, and they've been living that way ever since Israel put the place under siege in 2006 or 2007. And it's absolutely disgraceful. They're not terrorists, and they're subject to daily terrorism at the hands of Israel all the time. Even in West Bank, subject to daily terrorism at the hands of Israel. Israel is a terrorist state, and it's not a democracy. It's an apartheid terrorist state that is creating all of the instability in the Middle East. All of it's being done at the hand of Israel, and the Palestinians are caught right in the middle of it. You know, to think that these are victims, I mean, they're not. They're just, it's a very, very aggressive nation. And the Palestinians are the ones who suffer. And the programming with people, even some of the stuff you see in school now, there was someone in a British school, the kids were given a test, and basically the test outlined that the Palestinians are terrorists. Why do they think they have the right to carry out terrorism against Israel? It basically just programs the people to believe that the Palestinians are all terrorists, and they're not. They're impoverished people that are fighting for their lives, fighting for some sort of recognition, fighting just to be allowed to live, because Israel doesn't want any of them there. They want the whole country to be Israel. They will not ever allow peace to happen with the Palestinians. They don't want peace. They want the Palestinians gone. And that is the thing. I mean, and all of the peace negotiations, these aren't peace negotiations. This is always Israel and Egypt putting down an ultimatum to the Palestinians. And the ultimatum is you stay in prison and we get your land. That's it. And if you don't agree with it, well, you're a terrorist. If you fight back, you're a terrorist. They want Hamas disarmed because they don't want Hamas to be able to fight back against constant Israeli aggression. And Hamas was created by Israel anyway. So, I mean, the whole thing's a mess. It really is a mess. But we gotta stop supporting it. We've got to put sanctions against this country, stop supporting it with its ethnic cleansing program, and acknowledge it for what it is. It's ethnic cleansing, it's genocide, and it's brutal. And people have got to get out of this programming that all Palestinians are terrorists. They're not. There are 7 million Palestinian refugees on this earth that need a right of return to their lands as well. They've got no home. They've got nowhere to go. You've got 160,000 Palestinian refugees living in Syria. Syria doesn't want them there. Now, Assad hasn't been feeding him. He's been absolutely brutalizing these people. I mean, Assad's not a good guy. None of these politicians are good people. But the Palestinians, they've got nowhere to go. Why can't they go to Palestine? It's their country. They've lived there for centuries. I mean, Israel existed within Palestine for centuries, and everybody got along fine. It wasn't until the United Nations decided to divide it up and turn it into a country and a nuclear power that was going to attack everybody else that the whole world situation started to deteriorate.
Right.
You know, we need to look at this and call a spade. You know, the Palestinians are, you know, providing us an opportunity to take the matter in hand. They're providing us, the whole human race, an opportunity to step back into their humanity and stop this situation from continuing, you know.
And the Israelis are restricting their water, their food, and their medicine?
Everything. Like, they don't allow, they even did one count. One of the foreign minister, the Israeli foreign minister, actually worked out how many Palestinians were in Gaza and worked out how many calories they need to stay alive, and that's all they allow in. I mean, this is absolutely brutal treatment. I mean, this is absolutely inhuman. Even the taps, you turn the taps on in Gaza and it's salt water. It's the only water they can get in Gaza is salt water, except for the bottled water. You can't drink anything out of the taps. It's all got to be bottled water. They won't allow any concrete in to rebuild the place. It's been under siege for the last 6-7 years. I mean, and they say, oh, there is no siege. It's a security measure against the terrorists. You know, they're not terrorists. They're people who are fighting back against constant Israeli terrorism. The Israelis are the terrorists.
Yeah, they're fighting back. They're fighting an occupation is what they're fighting.
They are, you know. Palestine's never attacked Israel. Israel is an aggressive force. It's in Palestine. It's been taking over the country for 67 years. The Palestinians have never done anything aggressive. All they've ever done is defend themselves.
Yeah, I was watching a documentary, Max, and they were showing the settlements. The Palestinians had no water, but right across the street where there was a settlement, the person who lived there, nice big house with a gigantic pool in the backyard.
Yeah, yeah, and watering their lawn and all sorts of stuff. The Palestinians don't have enough to even drink, and they're not even allowed to cross the street. You can't walk on this side of the street. This is the Jewish side of the street. It's ridiculous, you know, and the whole country's Palestine. You know?
And checkpoints?
560 checkpoints in West Bank, in an area the size of, you know, most cities, like Sydney Western Suburbs, you know, not a very big area. 560 checkpoints. Absolutely ridiculous. Takes up to 6 hours to get through a checkpoint. Women giving birth on the side of the road. At checkpoints, you know, we're in full view of the hospital because the Israeli soldiers won't let them through. You know, they just treat them like subhumans. There's over 1,000 children in Israeli jails at the moment. They arrest children, 10-year-old children. They take them to military prison. They torture them for months on end. They inject them with pathogens and release them back into West Bank or Gaza. It's ridiculous. It's absolutely horrendous. And the world sits on and watches and goes, oh, God's chosen people. We have to support them. We can't speak out against them because they're poor victims, you know. They're just trying to defend themselves. No, they're not. They're taking over everything they can. The Israeli defense is to destroy any opposition. Don't allow any Arab nation to rise of any type of strength or autonomy. Make sure they're all squashed, subservient to Israeli hegemony. That's the whole plan. They're not victims at all. They're absolutely brutal. And unfortunately, the programming of the people is a lot of it. I mean, the victim mentality that's programmed into the Israeli people is a big part of it. I mean, you can't blame a lot of them for what they do because they're programmed into this mindset. You know, and the Israeli people are terrorized by their own government as much as the Palestinians are. You know, the Israeli people, they get air raid sirens going off all the time when they know there's no rockets coming, and there's no rockets that can possibly hit Tel Aviv anyway because they're just little fertilizer-powered pipes. They don't have any ordnance from Iran the way everyone's telling us. Iran is supplying these people with rockets and missiles. Rubbish. The place is under siege. You can't get a bloody mousetrap in there without Israel knowing about it. How the hell are you going to get rockets in there from Iran? It's absolutely ridiculous. It's been under siege since 2007, and they're saying they're getting ordnance in there from Iran. It's complete and utter crock. It's an absolute lie. You know, and the Israeli people, they're suddenly, you know, got poor old women hobbling down from their high rises, going off to the bomb shelters 2 or 3 times a day because the Israeli government's letting air raid sirens off when they know that there's no problem. So they terrorize their own people to make their own people think they're constantly under attack, which gives them the excuse to go and keep on stomping on Palestine, you know?
Yeah. It's the whole fear element of it, which unfortunately they're very good at. They're very good at making people fearful.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So you talk to most Israelis, and they sincerely believe that they're victims and that everything Israel's doing is to protect itself. It has to do it. It's got to defend itself because it's under attack all the time. it doesn't realize that it's not under attack. It's all these other nations are defending themselves against Israeli aggression, you know? But they're told that it's not aggression. We've got to destabilize all of these countries for our own preservation because everybody wants to kill us because we're Jews. Everybody wants to kill the Jews. The whole world is full of drooling Nazis who want to kill the Jews. So we have to protect ourselves against everybody. It's just ingrained into them, you know? And so they go out and attack everybody in the guise of self-defense, and they create all these enemies and create this victim mentality within their population, which gives them the ability to keep doing what they're doing. It's amazing, really, when you step back and look at it. But the people are fully programmed into this. They really believe that all Israel is doing is defending itself. You talk to any Israeli, that's what they believe.
It's interesting you should say that because I was watching, it was an interview, I guess. It was about 5 or 6 minutes with Max Blumenthal. He had said that the Zionists need anti-Semitism. They need it.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
They do. They thrive on it. I mean, they invented the word, for God's sake.
Yeah.
They thrive on it. They invented the whole thing. And it's what they need. They want the world to hate the Jews.
They want it, right.
That gives the Jews the ability, it gives Israel the ability to do what it's doing. See, they all hate us. See, we've got to do this. See.
Right.
But they're going out and they're making sure that everybody's incredibly pissed off with Israel, as you would be. How could you not be? If you're a humanitarian, you're annoyed with Israel. It's as simple as that, you know? So they're creating this whole mindset. I mean, even when you look at the whole biblical revelation thing about how everybody turns against the Jews in the end times and all the Jews have to return to Israel, Bibi Netanyahu's trying to make this happen. He really wants to create a situation in the world where it's just uncomfortable to live anywhere else if you're Jewish. You've got to come back to Israel. So Israel is just going to continue stomping on people and raising the ire of the world so that everyone starts looking down on the Jews because of what Israel's doing. Well, it's not all the Jews' fault. It's the, you know, Benjamin Netanyahu's government that is at fault. And these guys aren't even real Jews. They're Khazars, you know, don't even get me started on that. But,
No, you're absolutely right.
Yeah. So they're creating this whole stigma for the Jewish people all around the planet. Really, when you look at their actions, I mean, Bibi Netanyahu's government is the most anti-Semitic organization that's ever existed.
Yeah. It's really an unbelievable situation. And the next question I was going to ask, Max, and you've been very generous with your time, so I'll make this the last question. With all of this going on, and I know you said that all these countries are supporting Israel, but I'm kind of sensing a shift with the mindset of the population, especially in Europe, with regard to what's going on in Israel. What do you see happening? Let's just say, take the governments as an example. Are you seeing some governments, some countries stepping back from the Israeli tactics and saying, you know what, this is really overboard now and we're not going to stand by you. We might go through the motions, but our heart and soul is not into this.
Well, yeah, I mean, they're being forced to. They have to, because even the people that have bought into this whole New World Order campaign and this whole global police state, whole global governance campaign, I mean, yeah, we'll buy into it. But now, hang on, look, you're getting a little nasty. You're getting a little bit overboard. It's getting a bit too much in people's faces, and they've got to step back. They've got to distance themselves from it, because the brutal open slaughter that we're seeing in the Middle East is just – it's rampant. And it's becoming apparent to everybody that this whole ISIS, al-Nusra Front, al-Qaeda thing, this is all Western run.
Right.
It's becoming very apparent to people that these are not Muslims. This is not Muslims out there to create an Islamic State. It's a group of people out there destabilizing the Muslim world and turning the entire world against Islam. So we're starting to wake up and smell the coffee. People are seeing things for what they are. And so the governments, if they want to maintain any credibility at all, they have to distance themselves from it a little bit. You know, they're seeing what's happening. The people are not falling for it. And they're making too many mistakes now. They're stumbling because they're running scared. There's so many people are waking up now. Things like Rebecca Roth's book on 9/11 that's recently come out, which has exposed what happened to the planes. People are saying, hang on, we've been lied to. These people did 9/11. They staged it. They set it up themselves. Then they went out and they've attacked all of these Arab countries and destabilized all these countries, knowing all the time that these people were innocent. And, you know, is this America doing this? Why is America doing this? Well, hang on, it's not America doing it. It's this Zionist lobby that exists within the American political system that's doing it. And who benefits from all the actions that we're doing? It's Israel. It's the only one who benefits from all of this. All this global instability. Read the Greater Israel Project. There it is. And it's coming out now. So many people are talking about it now. And I've mentioned it on hundreds of radio shows. And you've got so many people that are talking about this now. And people aren't afraid of being called anti-Semitic anymore. You know, it gets to a time where You can't just hide behind this word and be cowed by this word, and you can't allow these types of human rights abuses to hide behind the word anti-Semitic.
Yep.
You know, it's not anti-Semitic to speak up against this. It's anti-life not to, you know, and people are beginning to realize this. You know, the people have overstepped the mark. The governments have overstepped the mark, and, you know, the people are going to come running down the street with pitchforks and lynch mobs soon. So, you know, the government really needs to distance themselves from it. If they want to maintain any credibility and try to maintain their position at all, they need to start at least pretending that they're acting in the interest of the people, and they need to stop going along with this global agenda. So I think they're being forced into it, Mike. They don't have a choice because they know their days are numbered.
I agree. Well, Max, again, I want to be respectful of your time, and we're just about at the hour mark. So I want to thank you so much for coming on the show. I had mentioned last week when you and I caught up briefly to set up this show that you were one of the very first guests to come on to my show early last year. I guess it was around February, March. And your coming on the show was instrumental in my ability to get this radio show some traction. So I want to thank you for that.
Well, my pleasure, brother. It's good to come on and talk to you. It's good for anyone to be speaking out. It really is. I like to go on to new shows and support people that want to get up and make a difference. And you've done some great work, so good on you. It's great to have been a part of it.
And that concludes my interview with Max Egan, and I hope you enjoyed the discussion as much as I did. Max's website can be found at www.thecrowhouse.com. And as always, I'd like to thank everyone for listening and visiting the blog, Sage of Quay Radio, which can be found by heading over to sageofquayradio.blogspot.com or by visiting our hub website, www.sageofquay.com. Also, if you get a moment, please take a listen to my album, Leaving Dystopia, by heading over to laborofloveMusic.com. And remember, live in truth and always serve creation. It's really that simple. See everyone next week. Be safe and joy, and God bless.